It is Monday, May 12th, 2014, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring young professionals, the Fast 15, and networking events in the May 12th edition, plus local business news in Northwest Arkansas. Subscriptions and more information are available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, an Arkansas judge overturns the state's ban on same-sex marriage, so what's next? Also, a conversation with the author of Crow After Roe, How Women's Health is the New Separate But Equal, and How to Change That. And the latest installment of Arkansongs, Roby Brock has his weekly business and political news update and more. But first, Governor Mike Beebe is joining other governors in fighting scheduled cuts to the National Guard. Reductions over the next 2 years will affect about 15,000 Guard members, including about 300 in Arkansas. In his weekly address, Governor Beebe said the Guard has become indispensable.
They protect us overseas while providing vital services here at home. That role on the home front has been highlighted during the past 2 weeks as the Arkansas National Guard has helped with continuous response to the deadly storms of April 27th. Some of the Guard units that responded so effectively to tornado-ravaged communities are among those identified by the Department of the Army for future cuts.
The governor says an even greater concern than the cuts over the next 2 years is a second round of sequestration scheduled for 2018. Arkansas would lose about 530 Guard troops if another sequestration takes effect. The National Governors Association has recommended an independent study before any cuts take effect, and a bill authorizing such a study has been introduced in the U.S. Senate. Governor Beebe recommends contacting congressional members about the importance of maintaining the Guard at full strength. Although Pulaski, Washington, and Carroll counties are issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples, many other counties in the state are not. One of those counties is Crawford County, where Teresa Armour is the county clerk. She says after receiving several calls this morning regarding whether the county would issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples.
I left an early voting site and stopped by our prosecuting attorney's office. I was not able to talk to the prosecuting attorney, so I talked to a deputy. I was advised that a circuit judge in Pulaski County did not have jurisdiction over Crawford County and that we was to wait on a Supreme Court ruling and or a circuit judge in Crawford County. If they was to order us to, then we could.
Madison County is taking a similar position. Farron Ledbetter, the Madison County clerk, says after reading Judge Piazza's ruling and after consulting with the county attorney, he concluded that the circuit court ruling only applies to the six counties that were a party in the Wright case, and therefore the ruling does not apply to Madison County. But Ledbetter says if a Supreme Court ruling orders all 75 counties in the state to comply and issue marriage certificates to same-sex couples, Madison County will be prepared.
In light of this ruling and you know, the anticipation that this will go to the Supreme Court, I have contacted my marriage license software provider and instructed him to immediately begin modifications on our marriage licenses to change the verbiage on that so that we will be immediately able to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples as soon as the law allows that.
According to a written statement, Sebastian County Clerk Sharon Brooks will also wait until a decision in the Arkansas Supreme Court before issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples. Members of Arkansas's congressional delegation have announced that more than $3 million in Department of Transportation funding will go to Arkansas airports for facility upgrades and improvements. Smithfield in Siloam Springs is set to receive $427,500 to rehabilitate taxiway pavement, while the Boone County Airport will receive $244,000 to rehabilitate its taxiway lighting system. Drake Field in Fayetteville will receive nearly $32,000 to go toward the rehabilitation of apron pavement, while the Carroll County Airport in Berryville will receive $54,000 to rehabilitate its existing runway pavement. Construction on Interstate 49 in northwest Arkansas will cause some lane shifts beginning this evening. According to the Arkansas Highway Transportation Department, southbound traffic is being restricted to one lane between the Weddington and Porter Road interchanges at various times between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. to allow traffic to be shifted to temporary lanes. And tomorrow evening, the northbound lanes will be similarly shifted. The lane shifts are expected to last for about 2 months while crews work to replace a drainage structure beneath the interstate. In Franklin County, the Highway Department will be conducting a routine bridge inspection, causing lane closures on Highway 23. Crews will inspect the highway bridge over the Arkansas River between Ozark and Webb City, and traffic will be reduced to one lane between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. through Wednesday. Traffic will be controlled using flaggers, cones, and warning signs. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals had a successful weekend. The Nats won 3 of 3 at home against the Springfield Cardinals, winning 9-1 Friday, 6-3 Saturday, and 9-8 yesterday. The trio of wins puts the Naturals at 14-22 on the season. Play continues on the road today as the Nats start a 4-game series against the Travelers in Little Rock. The Razorback baseball team held its final home series of the regular season this weekend. The Razorbacks won over Texas A&M Friday and Saturday with final scores of 3-2 and 7-3, respectively. But Arkansas fell in 10 innings yesterday with a final score of 6-5. The last series of the season will begin Friday when the Razorbacks travel to Columbia to take on Missouri. Tonight, there's an 80% chance of showers and thunderstorms with a low of 51 in northwest Arkansas. In the Arkansas River Valley, there's a 90% chance of showers and thunderstorms with a low of 55. Tomorrow, expect partly sunny skies with a 40% chance of showers and a high of 63 in northwest Arkansas, and a 50% chance of showers and a high of 67 in the Arkansas River Valley. Mostly cloudy tomorrow night with a 40% chance of rain and a low of 46 in northwest Arkansas and a 60% chance of showers and a low of 50 in the Arkansas River Valley. This is Ozarks at Large. Late Friday, Pulaski County Circuit Court Judge Chris Piazza overturned the state's constitutional ban on same-sex marriage, enacted in 2004 by a voter initiative. Word quickly spread on social networks that Eureka Springs County Courthouse would be open for wedding business on Saturday, the only courthouse in the state to do so as a popular wedding destination. By 7 a.m., long lines had formed, and Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich was there.
Same-sex couples from across Arkansas and some reportedly from out of state drove through the early morning hours on Saturday to Eureka Springs Western District County Courthouse to get in line for a wedding license. They had rushed to do so because they knew within days a stay might be placed by the state on Pulaski County Circuit Judge Chris Piazza's decision to legalize same-sex marriage in Arkansas, and that the decision would be appealed to the state Supreme Court. At first, couples at the Eureka Springs Courthouse were denied licensure. Deputy County Marriage Clerk Lana Gordon asked police to secure the building, blocking them from coming in, claiming she had not been instructed to marry same-sex couples. The reaction by the crowd was immediate.
You just made a really bad mistake for this town.
Huh? I just want to go home.
It's the law!
Why not?
It's the law!
But by 10 a.m., that clerk had stepped aside, and another deputy clerk by the name of Jane Osborne announced that they had been instructed to marry anyone who applied, saying she was happy to do it. The first same-sex couple to marry in Arkansas was Fort Smith residents Kristen Seaton, 27, and her partner of 4 years, Jennifer Rambo, 26, who had secured the very first place in line.
Can we go in?
Kentucky.
Okay. You sign it that way, that's good. We'll just leave that there. Okay. Here's your pretty license.
By the time the county courthouse formally closed at 1 p.m., 17 licenses had been issued, according to a Eureka Springs source. Among those married were longtime Eureka Springs residents Zeke Taylor and his partner Dick Titus.
We have been together for 42 years, and we think it's time that we are allowed to get married. We're both native Arkansans, and we wanted to get married in our home state, so this is a big day for us.
My name is Bill King. My partner, John, and I are plaintiffs in the lawsuit. I was not surprised by the verdict or by the decision. We sat through the hearings down in Little Rock, and it was pretty clear to me that the judge was going to go the right way on it. It's the right thing to do, and I think he knew it. He's on the right side of history.
Eureka Springs residents Bill King and his partner John Rankin, who were married in Canada 9 years ago, are among the 43 lesbian and gay plaintiffs in Wright versus the state of Arkansas. Their lead attorney is Cheryl Maples. She was on hand at the Eureka Springs courthouse to witness the event. She talked about Judge Chris Piazza's decision to strike down Arkansas's ban on same-sex marriage.
It was wonderful. He wrote a beautiful, beautiful opinion. I understand why it took him 3 weeks to write it, because it deserved that 3 weeks. And I really and truly believe that he has seen that there's been a systematic denial of civil rights to these people for years and years and years, and every day they're harmed by it. It's a major, major step forward. We're not done, but we are going to win.
At 2 p.m., the Association of Arkansas Counties reportedly held a conference call to discuss opening up marriage licensing bureaus across the state Monday morning. But by Saturday night, Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel, who recently went on record in support of same-sex marriage, announced he planned to appeal Judge Piazza's decision to the Arkansas Supreme Court and would request a hold on same-sex marriages in Arkansas. Jay Barth is a professor of political science at Hendricks College in Conway. He says Pulaski County Circuit Court in Little Rock is the seat of government where state constitutional cases are heard, so decisions made there prevail across Arkansas. But because several courthouses are defendants in Piazza's case, questions remain about if they are compelled to issue same-sex marriage licenses.
That said, there were other plaintiffs in the case who were married in other states, and we're seeking state recognition of their marriages, and so that would make it a statewide issue, at least on the marriage recognition portion of this. But there is some fuzziness about exactly which counties were affected by this because of that kind of lack of specificity.
Jay Barth traveled to Little Rock this morning to witness same-sex marriage licensure at Pulaski County Courthouse.
It was very, very orderly. There was clearly a lot of preparation that had gone into the day with the county officials who were ready to go. They opened a little bit early to hand out applications so that allowed folks to go ahead and fill out the application to speed up the process. There were a large number of officiants there, so they were folks who had who were already or who had gotten registered as officiants, and so they had a lot of folks there to marry people to make that very efficient. So there was a lot of planning. It was a very different scene than Eureka Springs on Saturday, which, as you saw, was a little chaotic. It was anything but that today in Little Rock, as everybody kind of knew the drill and kind of got it moving in a very orderly fashion.
Soon after Piazza's decision to strike down Arkansas's ban on same-sex marriage, Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel announced he would appeal.
Well, the state of Arkansas did file notice with the state Supreme Court that they do intend to appeal the decision. The Attorney General has said that all along. And they also did request a stay of Judge Piazza's ruling last week. So it usually takes 1 to 3 days for that to be processed by the court. They need to ascertain, determine whether they do want to issue a stay. We will relatively soon hear whether they are going to issue a stay. I think there's widespread expectation that they will.
So what about the validity of Arkansas same-sex licenses just issued in recent days?
Well, I think that they clearly are legal marriages. The Obama administration has recognized for federal purposes those marriages that took place in Utah, for instance, during a similar period when the federal courts had ruled there and marriages had begun in the state of Utah. And then similarly in California, the 18,000 or so marriages that took place there during the period before the passage of Proposition 8 in 2008, those were later upheld as valid marriages by the federal courts. So it will be a separate legal issue that the state Supreme Court will have to deal with. There does seem to be limited precedent that suggests that marriages that are legally performed, will stand. But, Arkansas's court, of course, has never dealt with that issue.
And the appeal process?
This could be something that could be dealt with pretty quickly. We are going to see some change in the composition of the Supreme Court due to the elections this fall. Now taking place, and that could certainly affect the membership of the court. Could affect the ultimate decision because we don't know how many of these justices or future justices. We don't know their stance on the issue.
And until a stay is declared, same-sex couples are expected to show up at county courthouses across the state asking county clerks for marriage licenses. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Jazz is in the air every Friday and Saturday evening from 10 p.m. till 1 a.m. right here on KUAF 91.3 FM. From 10 to midnight, it's Shades of Jazz with yours truly, Robert Ginsberg. Daniel Estes takes you from midnight till 1 a.m. on Saturday morning with Goodnight Jazz, and it's Fred Hall's Swing Thing at midnight on Sundays. America's Music, Jazz, on your NPR station KUAF.
Abortion continues to be a very divisive issue. But can there be common ground?
I think there can be common ground, and there's a lot of places where we can have common ground. Nobody wants more abortions. What everybody wants on the pro-choice side is we want an abortion for every person who does not want to be pregnant. That's the end goal of it is if you don't want to be pregnant, you should be able to have access to abortion without jumping through a lot of hoops, without having to go into hock, without having to say, I'm going to pull out of school for this semester so that I can use the money to get an abortion. That is all that we want is for that access to be there and for it to be available, not to push people into it, but for people to be able to use.
That story's coming up in the second half hour of Ozarks at Large. The president makes his first trip to Arkansas as commander-in-chief. Roby Brock has the details in his weekly political and business news recap.
President Barack Obama met with families and first responders in Vilonia on Wednesday after taking a tour of the damage caused by the April 27th tornado. Folks here are tough. They look out for one another, and that's been especially clear over the past week, Obama said. Your country's going to be there for you. Obama was accompanied by Governor Mike Beebe, Senator Mark Pryor, and Congressman Tim Griffin as he flew over the damage in Marine One. The president declared a major disaster shortly after the storm hit to streamline federal assistance to affected communities. This was Obama's first visit to Arkansas as president. Pine Bluff-based Simmons First National will acquire Community First Bank shares of Tennessee in a $243 million deal announced on Tuesday. The all-stock transaction will add two board members to Simmons First Board of Directors. Simmons recently completed a $53 million acquisition of Little Rock-based Metropolitan National Bank in April, and it announced in March that it would acquire Little Rock-based Delta Trust and Bank for $66 million. Verizon Wireless adding around 300 jobs in Arkansas as part of an expansion of its sales, tech support, and customer service operations in the state. The full-time jobs will be in the telecom giant's customer service, call center, tech support, and sales areas. Tyson Foods recorded net income of $213 million on quarterly sales that topped $9 billion for the first time ever. 1 year ago, Tyson Foods posted second quarter net income of $95 million on sales of nearly $8.4 billion. Tyson saw improvements in its chicken, beef, and pork segments. El Dorado Best Murphy USA reported net income of $9.6 million on revenues of $4 billion. That's down from $22 million of profits a year ago. Murphy USA said its growth of non-tobacco merchandise sales on average improved during the quarter. It also said it opened 11 stores from January through the end of March. Windstream first quarter financials reflected a rough start to the new fiscal year as the Little Rock-based telecom coped with adjustments for layoffs and continuing shifts in the telecommunications industry. For the quarter ended on March 31st, revenue and sales topped $1.4 billion. That was down by about $31 million from the previous year. Net income dropped from $52 million 1 year ago to just $16 million for the quarter. And a committee called Our Community, Our Dollars is collecting signatures to make Saline County in central Arkansas and Craighead County in northeast Arkansas wet. Starting this week through early July, residents in the two counties can sign a petition to allow the sale of alcohol locally. The committee will need signatures from 38% of registered voters in each county to make it to the November ballot. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business and Politics update.
Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T. Challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. It is Monday, May 12th, 2014, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is going to be one of those segments where we whimper a lot wish we were kids.
Oh, okay.
Because this is the first of four segments on summer activities for kids.
Oh, and they get cooler every year.
They really do. This is the Bentonville Day.
Okay.
Trike Theater has all sorts of camps going on, and I believe the first one starts June 16th. Here are some of the names of the camps. They're for all ages, starting with four-year-olds.
Oh, wow.
Knights, Princesses, and Dragons.
See, I would have been there.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. Around the World in 80 Days. Oh, the Places You'll Go. Magic School Bus. Lost in the Jungle. Down the Rabbit Hole. Mindcraft Mischief, Broadway Blast, Young Company Improv, Young Company The Science of Acting, Jungle Book Production Camp, and Seussical Junior Production Camp. All of which I want to do, each and every one of them. You can find out more at Trike Theater, that's with an RE.org, or at 464-5084. Also in Bentonville, Crystal Bridges Museum has all sorts of things. There are June drawing and painting camps for ages 6 to 12. Art and Nature happens in July. Explore the galleries and trails. Mixed Media Madness in July. July Painting and Drawing. A drama camp with Trike Theater called Creature Feature in July. And American Masterwork Theater, another drama camp with Trike Theater for older kids. And you can find out about all of those at crystalbridges.org.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
How do you know what to make of the news? Is it politically inflected? Is it stenography? Is it just plain untrue? On the Media helps you decode the news. We reveal the process behind the story. because there's sometimes as much to be learned from the gathering as from the news itself. Please join us.
You can hear On the Media Sunday mornings at 11 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
KUAF is supported by 121 Digital Marketing, a full-service digital agency, helping local businesses with their online presence. Services include reputation and social media management, mobile and desktop website design and management, press releases, search engine marketing, and optimization. 121digitalmarketing.com for more information.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas. Roy Buchanan was a guitar hero of the Guitar Heroes. He was born in Ozark, Arkansas, September 23, 1939, the son of a Pentecostal preacher. As a teen, Buchanan played with R&B star Johnny Otis and in the bands of Arkansas-ers Ronnie Hawkins and Dale Hawkins, heard here. The rockabilly stars, who were cousins, would often steal one another's bandmates, but Buchanan mostly played with Dale and recorded this 1960 song, Lovin' Bug, and several other sides with Dale Hawkins and other Hawkins sidemen, such as DJ Fontana and Willie Dixon. Arkansas-er Levon Helm played drums with Ronnie and the Hawks, which later became the band. Helm said the Hawks had to look like we were having a better time than anybody. Not Roy. He didn't believe in putting on a show. He just stood there and played the guitar. We loved how good Roy was, but he was too weird for the Hawk. In 1961, Robbie Robertson also came in on guitar, and Buchanan soon left the band. The Hawks eventually became known as, simply, the band. In the 1970s, Roy Buchanan's reputation grew among the tastemakers, but his albums didn't sell very well, and he never had a hit. In fact, the Franklin County native was the subject of a PBS documentary called The Best Unknown Guitarist in the World. Eric Clapton and Jeff Beck were both fans, and Buchanan was said to be among those considered to join the Rolling Stones in 1969, but Buchanan claimed he turned them down. Although Roy Buchanan released several albums on major labels, some with star support, he never found commercial success, and some of his album titles noted his problems with alcohol, like 1976's A Street Called Straight and 1977's Loading Zone. But Buchanan continued to tour and record. Things came full circle when he opened up for his old bandmates, Levon Helm, and the reformed band in 1987. The next year, on August 14th, in Fairfax, Virginia, an intoxicated Buchanan hung himself in jail following a domestic disturbance. He was the father of seven and 48 years old. From Ozark in Franklin County, here's Roy Buchanan with Roy's Blues from 1973. Franklin County native Roy Buchanan of Ozark with Roy's Blues from 1973. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. For more information, visit arkansongs.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Nerdies will be offering summer sessions for kids. Founder Brad Harvey and his team have assembled a lineup of mentors in a variety of subject areas. For kids who have a technology bend, Nerdies offers sessions like 2D and 3D video game development, which will be mentored by Professor David Frederick of the University of Arkansas. In this session, kids will have the opportunity to build their very own video game in the university's video game development lab, work alongside real professionals, and learn programming along the way. Other sessions will focus on videography, art, improv, music, and creative writing. Nerdy summer sessions are week-long day camps, which begin on June 9th and run throughout the summer. All sessions are limited to 10 kids and are filling up fast. To register or for more information, go to nerdies.me/summer-sessions. Eco-adventure writer Roland Smith is coming to Bentonville. Read Roland is a month-long initiative that invites the kids of our community to read Roland's books, engage in activities related to the books, and then hear the stories behind those books. Roland Smith will be presenting at 6 p.m. tomorrow in the Bentonville Public Library's Walmart Community Room. The event is free and open to the public. Read Roland is inspired by the Bentonville Public Schools' choice of Roland's contemporary suspense novel, Zack's Lie, as the One District, One Book title for middle school students. One District, One Book invites the entire community to embrace the same book, initiating a community-wide literary conversation. Read Roland expands this conversation to include the entire body of Roland's work, as well as the work of his wife, Marie Smith. For more information, visit bentonvillelibrary.org. The Apple Seeds Teaching Farm Tool Drive is underway. Apple Seeds needs tools, large and small, for the new teaching farm. You can drop off your used farm and garden tools before May 15th. That's this Thursday. At the Ozark Natural Foods donation bin at the front entrance of the store, which is located in Fayetteville. More information is available at appleseedsnwa.org. Arkansans suffering dental pain and discomfort will find needed relief at the 8th Annual Arkansas Mission of Mercy May 16th through the 17th at the Northwest Arkansas Convention Center in Springdale. Volunteers of all types are needed, including hundreds of general volunteers and health professionals such as dentists, hygienists, dental assistants, and pharmacists. Volunteers from across the state will provide free basic dental care to adults and children of all ages on a first-come, first-served basis. Doors open at 6 a.m. each day for cleanings, fillings, and extractions. No income or eligibility requirements are necessary. Since Arkansas Mission of Mercy started in 2007, more than 12,000 patients have been treated in only 14 total clinic days. Organized by the Arkansas State Dental Association, the two-day free dental clinic is funded by several sponsors, including the Walmart Foundation and a $100,000 grant from the Delta Dental of Arkansas Foundation. More information is available at arkansasmissionofmercy.org or by calling 1-800-501-2732. The Arkansas Canoe Club will host a free screening of Patagonia's new film, Damnation, at 7 p.m. May 16th at the historic Old High Auditorium, which is located at 406 Northwest 2nd Street in Bentonville. For more information, visit facebook.com/Arkansas Canoe Club. This is Ozarks at Large. Robin Marty is an unabashed supporter of a woman's right to an abortion. She is a freelance writer, a lecturer, and researcher. Her book, Crow After Roe, How Women's Health is the New, Separate But Equal, and How to Change That, argues restrictions on abortions in many states have made it far harder for poor women to receive reproductive health procedures. Last month, Robin Marty came to the University of Arkansas as a guest of the Gender Studies program and the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences. She told Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums she selected 11 states' approaches to abortion regulations as the starting point for her book.
The states that we picked purposely to profile are all states that either were the first one to introduce a particular kind of bill. The way that model legislation tends to work is that a bill will be written and it'll be fed out to one legislator in one particular state. Once they see how that goes over in a state, then depending on how the reaction is, they'll start to feed it out to other friendly states that have similar interests. So once you have one bill, the first thing you wait and see is this bill going to get challenged in the courts? That's not always a deal breaker, as we saw with things like the heartbeat bill, which obviously went through, everybody knew was unconstitutional, would get challenged, but they still kept passing them anyway. But with Nebraska was the first time that they ever did a fetal pain ban, and it was done purposely because they thought that Leroy Carhart, who was the provider there, would challenge it, and it would go straight up to the Supreme Court. Since that didn't happen, they then introduced it in multiple other states, mostly in states where there wasn't any actual standing for someone to challenge the bill. That makes the bill look constitutional because it's not challenged at all. All of these states are either the first attempt to try and pass a bill or the first time that that bill has been enforced. By doing that, you can see all of the different legal implications and the legwork that they used in order to find different routes to try and make it up to the Supreme Court and overturn Roe.
That is the ultimate destination, they
hope?
That
is the ultimate destination for a particular group of pro-life activists. We have to realize that at this point, there are two different groups of pro-life activists. On one side, we have the people who are doing what's called the incremental strategy, and that's what I detail in the book. The incremental strategy strategy is meant to overturn Roe, send abortion rights back to the states, and each state gets to decide for themselves. There's another group that is getting more bold because so many laws have passed, and this group wants to overturn everything at once, and they're doing this by means of fetal personhood. And with personhood, what you will do is basically pass a human life amendment that says life begins at conception, goes to natural death, and because of it, there is no sort of bill nor sort of ban. There is no action that can be taken that can stop that life. Those people don't want Roe overturned. They want abortion ended altogether, and they want to go straight for that.
Many of the states that are profiled in your book are what we think of as traditionally conservative. Mm-hmm. Many have wide swaths of rural population. I'm wondering how many opportunities or abortion providers were there in some of these states 20 years ago compared to now?
There's been a huge decline in abortion providers in a lot of states. There's a number of reasons for that. One is the population. The other is the fact that we have much better birth control than we used to back in the 80s and in the 90s, and people use it far more effectively. So there's a lot less need for abortion than there was back then. To have a clinic is a fairly expensive thing to do, especially if you don't have a wide population. And when you have a clinic, especially now that we've seen things in the 80s and the 90s, such as rescue missions where people will try and enter into a clinic and try and stop people from abortion. We've seen the violence that's happened toward providers. And then now with these new bills that we call targeted regulation of abortion provider bills that state exactly how a clinic has to be built, how wide their halls should be, what sort of staff they need to have on, what sort of medical implements they need to have in a building, these drive up the expenses to the point in which you don't have as many clinics simply because it's no longer fiscally possible to have clinics. Another aspect that we see is as Planned Parenthood is becoming more prevalent across the country, because Planned Parenthood can provide abortions and other services, these individual abortion providers will find that if there's a Planned Parenthood that's nearby, sometimes the Planned Parenthood, because it can sustain itself, will take away a lot of clientele and it makes it harder for them to stay open as well. So in some ways, it's the laws that are closing clinics, and we see many clinics shut down. In some ways, it's the fact that there's another provider that will help kind of ratchet down how much business another clinic can do. So it's kind of a two-pronged attack that's making providers disappear. But also, there's a growing, they call it the grain of the provider, where a lot of people came into abortion services because they either had seen what had happened before Roe, and so they would provide services because they don't want to see women have to turn back to illegal abortions and dangerous, unsafe abortions. As those providers are still there, but we have more medical schools that aren't using abortion as a part of the medical curriculum, we have less people who are trained to do it. So as those older providers start to retire out, we don't have as many younger people who can take over.
The title of the book lets readers know the suggestion, your argument, that what is happening is there is a socioeconomic divide mm-hmm. on services available for women.
There
if
is.
It gets harder to receive, people who are in lower income brackets have a harder time.
It is. And primarily we see that people who are in lower income brackets tend to be women of color. And so those women will have a lot less access to these services. This isn't anything new by any means. The reason that we picked the title and the reason that we did this specifically is that this book only looks at what has happened since 2010. It focuses expressly on a real change in laws that happened. We've seen over 300 bills that have been introduced. We've seen over 100 of them that have passed that have regulated access to reproductive rights. These happened in 2010 because there was such a surge of Republicans elected to state houses primarily and Republican governorships. But this has been a longstanding problem. Women of color, women of low economic standing have always had a much more difficult time getting medical services. They've been taken advantage of much more by the medical industry. Informed consent tends to get just be brushed by when it comes to women of color. So this has been a long-standing situation that Dorothy Roberts wrote a book called Killing the Black Body that is just a fantastic history of how this has always gone about. And in some ways, this book just kind of grows from that.
This was a divisive issue before the Roe decision in 1973. Mm-hmm. It has not become any less decisive in
not
the 40-plus years since. I'm generalizing here, making a big statement. Very few people involved in this discussion would tell you they want more abortions.
Right.
can there be common ground?
I think there can be common ground, and there's a lot of places where we can have common ground. Nobody wants more abortions. What everybody wants on the pro-choice side is we want an abortion for every person who does not want to be pregnant. That's the end goal of it, is if you don't want to be pregnant, you should be able to have access to abortion without jumping through a lot of hoops, without having to go into hock, without having to say, I'm going to pull out of school for this semester so that I can use the money to get an abortion. That is all that we want, is for that access to be there and for it to be available, not to push people into it, but for people to be able to use. One thing that everybody does have in common is that we want people who want to be pregnant and who want to be able to have their children to have the resources that they need in order to make that happen. We want to make sure that people have health care, and health care that will allow them to give birth and not go into horrendous amounts of debt because they're giving birth. We want them to be able to have access to food. We want them to be able to have access to education. We want them to be able to have homes that are safe that they can raise these children in. This is easy common ground for everyone to be able to work together on, and for some reason it's become a divisive issue. Another place where everybody has common ground is that we all want to be sure that there aren't as many unintended pregnancies. That should be a simple one as well. We need full-spectrum sex education to make sure that happens. We need to make sure that we have access to birth control, yet for some reason, access to birth control is one of the things that's being fought over. Birth control is an easy one. It's preventing pregnancy. This is something that 95% of all Americans will use at some point in their life. That is as common a ground as you can get, yet for some reason, we're still battling it state by state.
Any statistics that show the state legislatures that have passed the most restrictive laws on abortion and reproductive rights, what the percentage is of men versus women in those legislatures?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. I don't have those numbers. I can tell you that places like She Should Run, Emily's List, those are all resources that would have the breakdown of where women fall in state legislators. I can tell you for sure that one of the things we talk about in the book is how important it is that women run for office.
Which, of course, is not to assume that all women.
Of course, not all women are going to be on the same side of the issue. But when you have women in office, you tend to have more people who will support all of the things that lead up to making sure that people can have healthy pregnancies and raise healthy children. Women in office makes sure that people can raise families. And I encourage every woman, regardless of her political stripe, if she thinks about running, she should run, because men just run. We have seen studies that show that if somebody asks a man to run, regardless of his political background, he'll just go ahead and do it. If somebody asks a woman to run, she'll think about it. She'll wait for somebody else to ask her. She'll start with a really low school board or a really easy race to edge her way in. Men just say, no, never mind, I'm going to run for Congress. I'm a businessman. I have a background. I've led people. Women don't do that, and women need to do that.
Even if none of these state laws get to the Supreme Court and then lead to the overturn of Roe versus Wade, there have been great successes, and I would think that many of the people who oppose abortion on any grounds would say that part of their job is already done because it has become incredibly more difficult.
We have a little joke that we used to use for the title that it's called The Red State War of Abortion. That's kind of my background title for the book. And it's because literally it's a one-by-one state war on making sure that abortion ends state per state. We have some states like Arkansas where that's almost happened. We have one clinic here. There are six states in the country now that only have one abortion provider. One of the examples that I use is in Missouri. Missouri has one provider. It's in St. Louis. And that's the only provider that they have left. Missouri is about to pass a bill that will make a 72-hour wait before you get an abortion. So you would go in, see a doctor, and then you would have to come back 3 days later before you could actually have the procedure. This is a horrible hardship for women who have jobs, for women who come from far away. They would either have to drive hours and hours back twice in 1 week, or they would have to stay overnight for a few nights in the local area. Or what they could do is take another 10-15 minute drive across the river into Illinois, where there's a clinic just 15 minutes further along. If women go and do that and they decide that they are going to have the abortion over in Illinois, they've just legally ended abortion in Missouri without actually doing it. What they call it is undue burden, and it's a standard that's set up by a separate law or a separate legal case called Planned Parenthood v. Casey. In it said that a state has the right to restrict abortion as much as it wants, lives, especially if it's in the interest of a woman's health. So in so-called informed consent, where you provide her extra information, waiting periods, so she has more time to think about it. As long as there is not an undue burden, then a state can pass any law that it wants. What all of these laws in the books are about is testing what does undue burden mean. Nobody's entirely sure what that means. It's not a clear legal definition. So when we see states like Texas, where they've passed a bill that is going to close almost all but five clinics in the state, is that an undue burden? Is it official that abortion is legal in a state as long as there's one clinic left to access that abortion? That's the fight that we're going to be having, and that's the thing that the Supreme Court is going to decide for us. When is abortion technically legal? Does that make it a right?
In the past several years, we've seen some shift on marijuana use and legality, especially with medicinal marijuana. Mm-hmm. We've seen a big shift on the attitudes towards same-sex marriages. It's becoming legal in state after state almost monthly.
Right.
What have we seen as far as social attitude towards, and it's a broad issue, but towards abortion or reproductive rights?
It doesn't tend to shift. A lot of what we've seen in Gallup polling ever since abortion was made legal is that there's a fairly even split between the idea of pro-life and pro-choice. And when you look at those labels aren't helpful, and that's probably why there's still such a split.
Sure, because there would be a difference between someone who would, say, support the morning after pill.
Right.
And someone who would support abortion later and everything in
right.
between.
Right. So the labels don't help, and so it's not – it's not an easy way to decide how people feel. One of the things that I use to explain why it seems that we're stuck in the mud with abortion attitudes is the fact that, and this is a really, I mean, it's not a family-friendly way of looking at it, but when you look at the civil rights issues, and civil rights changed once people realized that you were born in the skin color that you had and it wasn't something that you could choose. Now we're seeing a massive shift on GLBT rights and gay marriage because people are more widely grasping the idea that this is not a choice that people are making. This is something that they are born into. The reason that we're not seeing the same shift on abortion rights is because people still firmly believe that when it comes to being poor, when it comes to not having access to things, it's not because of something that you were born into. It's not because of inherent issues that come with racial inequality. It's because you're not trying hard. Being poor is something that you can fix. Being poor is not something that you can choose. And being poor is something that is morally less. Because of these attitudes, most of the abortion laws that we see aren't stopping abortion for everyone. They're stopping abortion for people without means. And the idea is, if you really want this abortion, you should have to work for it. It goes along the lines of people saying that abortion shouldn't be used for birth control. Nobody wants to use an abortion for birth control. Abortion is not comfortable. Abortion is not easy. Abortion is not cheap, as birth control is. But you have to work for this abortion. If you're not willing to work for it, you haven't earned it. If you were poor and you did not have the ability to get birth control in the first place, being pregnant is your fault. It's this type of attitude that makes it impossible for us to fully shift the entire discussion when it comes to reproductive rights.
Robin Marty is the author of Crow After Row, How Women's Health is the New Separate But Equal and How to Change That. She spoke last month on the University of Arkansas campus as a guest of the Gender Studies program and the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences. While in Northwest Arkansas, she talked to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums. Walton Arts Center's Artisphere, Arkansas's Arts and Nature Festival, welcomes the contemporary dance company Trey McIntyre Project May 16th. Other events this week include a community dance at Wilson Park, an evening of film and dance at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, and on stage at Walton Arts Center. Tickets and information available at artispherefestival.org. The 5th annual Singing for Spays picnic to benefit Spay, Arkansas will be May 17th from 5:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at Dog Party USA. Tickets will be available at the door. Barbecue with all of the fixings, refreshments, and live music will be offered. More information available at spayarkansas.org or on Facebook at Spay Arkansas. KUAF is supported by ModThink, a social media strategy firm offering team-driven social media solutions for small and medium businesses and organizations. More information available on the web at modthink.com. a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Mansfield. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. Thanks again for listening, and I hope your week is off to a fantastic start.